Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
Hey, y'all. We're here. Hello, friends.
We're so smooth.
I know. We're like butter. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in again tonight. This show is for all you songwriters and performers and musicians around the country who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, we don't know anything. By the way, this is our eight-year anniversary.
Happy anniversary,
Scott.
8 years
on the air. Can you believe that?
It's...
Next week, we start number nine.
What's my present? Do I get a present?
A punch in the throat. Later.
Nice! That's the eight-year present.
That's the eight-year present. And the seven-year present and the nine-year present.
Yeah.
No, we don't have any answers. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are. But we are able to find brilliant, talented people, bring them into the studio and pick their brains and give you the opportunity to join the conversation as well.
Yeah, and you know how you do that? You go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow.
Forgot to do that.
You can like us and chime in with your questions and comments. There, you could also hit us up on Twitter at The Music Row Show. We kept it very simple. It's just at The Music Row Show everywhere.
There you go. Hey, if you have not heard, and I can't believe you haven't because, you know, everybody's a buzz. We're now on the Blue Highways TV has been picked up by the Dish Network.
That's
so
right.
You can watch us everywhere.
That's right. You can watch us four times a week on Channel 73 on Blue Highways all over the U.S., which is on Dish now. And for the first time ever, which we're excited about, right here in Nashville.
Oh, my goodness. How exciting.
I know.
and that is kind of a big deal because we've been on the air for 3 years on TV, but nowhere in Tennessee.
That's
except
true.
For maybe a little pocket in Knoxville.
Right.
So this is really exciting. People around here can actually see the show, and we're very excited.
We got a big show tonight, actually.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Big show. We've got mega hit recording artist and member of the Hall of Fame group, the Oak Ridge Boys, and then we're actually I should also mention he's an author because he's got a great
he's
book
wearing
out.
A smoking jacket here.
I know
very
he's
exciting.
Like very sophisticated
a pipe
and then we're gonna have another great hour
talking with our pals Bluegrass Gospel Legends in the making and now big time TV stars Daly and Vincent in hour two.
Maybe they can give us a pointer or two.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, Scott, why don't you introduce our guest here?
Well, we are continuing our quest to have all the Oak Ridge Boys on the show. We're yeah. just doing it one member at a time.
One at a time. Yep.
And tonight's guest is extremely special one for me. Thanks to him, I have one musical memory with my dad. Because my dad was not musical at all. He never sang. And my mom did, but he never sang. Had nothing to do with music. And one time he sang. One song exploded on the charts and changed the Oak Ridge Boys from hit country and gospel singers to international superstars. But to a teenage me, it was the first and only time that I heard my dad sing. And it was the Oom Papa Mau Mau. And that's what he would sing, and he'd always try to get all the way down, and it would never work, and we'd laugh, and that is my one musical memory with my dad, so thank you for that. I'm very happy about that. That voice is with us in studio. We're honored to have him here to discuss his recent memoir, which is an incredible book, From Elvis to Elvira. It's a terrific read. We've been enjoying it over the last couple of weeks. And also the Oak Ridge Boys' latest gospel CD, which is Rock of Ages, which has been nominated for Dove Awards, not only for the album, but also for the single with Merle Haggard, which is
Sweet Jesus.
Yes. Sweet Jesus. So we have a lot to talk about. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to say Richard Sturban, we're glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show. And we're out of time, but it was really nice having you here. Thank you.
I was going to say, you guys said that you're looking for answers. You sound to me like you've found several answers.
Well,
you guys are a wealth of information.
Only because of the guests. Only because of
true.
The guests.
So I love your book. I was really struck by how similar our backgrounds are in that we both had grandparents who didn't speak English at all. But I was shocked to find out that you never actually learned Italian, even though you spent a bunch of time with your grandmother growing up. How in the world did that happen? How did you talk to each other?
That's an interesting question, and I was able to understand her. I used to go to her house for lunch. She lived right across the elementary school that I went to, and I used to go to her house for lunch. That's where I developed my love for Italian food, I think, going to her house for lunch all the time. And she would communicate to me without ever saying a word in English. And I'm not exactly sure how that happened, but I did understand what she was trying to say. I really did.
All right. Wow. Well, I learned a ton in this book. One is that you and Hino have absolutely nothing in common, really, for starters.
That was the only thing.
Is
really,
the
right
only
there.
Thing?
Yeah,
okay,
it,
good.
Right.
You mean you were not a boy soprano? And
He still is.
Yeah. I'm sorry to say.
No, I
Puberty
learned.
Never happened.
I learned a lot in the book. I before the book, I really had no idea that you had toured with Elvis. And so imagine playing Vegas, those great Vegas shows and those tours that where he was filling up stadiums, which was really unheard of at the time. And then to find out you're making $275 a week to do these shows. I mean, that's crazy. But what surprised you most about Elvis the person and then Elvis the artist?
Well, I think the first big surprise in my life regarding Elvis was the first time that I ever met him.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point in my life, I was pretty much a casual Elvis fan. When I got the gig with J.D. and the Stamps and we found out we were going to be singing with Elvis, I thought it was very, very exciting. But it required us going to Minneapolis, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
early, where the tour was going to start, to do a rehearsal.
Okay.
And so we were scheduled to go to the rehearsal. We showed up at the appointed place at the appointed time, and it was in a ballroom at the hotel there in Minneapolis. We walked in there, and Elvis's band was there, the TCB band,
mm-hmm.
the Sweet Inspirations. They were there. We had a chance to hang out with them. We got to know them very, very well. Had a lot of fun with them, but we were there for quite a bit of time, and there was no Elvis. Everyone's looking at their watches, and everybody's going, well, where is Elvis? Later, I found out that Elvis enjoyed being fashionably late.
Did he?
And he was indeed fashionably late on that particular day. But anyway, after a while, you could hear this commotion coming down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
The door opens, and this little entourage of people surrounding Elvis, they walk into the room. But when Elvis walked into the room, and I saw him for the first time in my life, live and in person, I went, wow. I think I now realize why this guy is the biggest star in the world. And back then, arguably, he probably was.
Oh, sure, sure.
And he walked into the room, and he, like, filled the room with his presence almost.
Really?
He had such charisma. He had such magnetism. It was pretty special. And from that point on in my life, I was no longer a casual Elvis fan, but a diehard Elvis fan,
right,
if I could put it that way. And I'll never forget that experience. You know, he came over to me. He hugged my neck. He welcomed me to the organization. He knew my first name, which really did impress me.
Right.
So my very first impression with Elvis was probably the biggest surprise I ever experienced, because I went, wow, this guy is really, really something special.
It's the real deal. There's
really
something.
I only met one other person in my life that had that same kind of, and that's also in the book. Eventually, we can probably get to that, and that is Johnny Cash.
Right.
He had that same aura about him. You know, when he walked into the room, I mean, you could feel his presence. There was something very, very special about him as well.
Wow.
Man. Well, let me back up a little bit. I know you talk about this in the book, but how did you end up getting the gig to play or to sing with Elvis?
Well, it had to do with J.D. Sumner's friendship with Elvis. You know,
and J.D. Sumner, for our listeners, he was the other bass. He was the bass in the Stamps.
Yeah. And Elvis, I mean, J.D. is what I'm trying to say, is, you know, actually in the Guinness Book of World Records for having recorded the lowest note ever, you know, on a song called Blessed Assurance, mm-hmm. and which is also, by the way, on our
latest.
It's
on the CD.
And J.D.'s version of that song inspired me to want to do that song. So, but you know, J.D. was very, very special, and I enjoyed being around him. I certainly did. He was an influence on me as well. But we got, to answer your question, we got the gig because of J.D.'s friendship with Elvis.
Okay.
Before J.D. kind of helped organize the Stamps, which is an old name in Southern gospel music. It goes back way before J.D. Sumner became involved with it. Mm-hmm. But before J.D. became a part of the Stamps, for years he sang with the Blackwood Brothers, mm-hmm. and they lived and worked out of Memphis. They actually sang at Elvis's mother's funeral.
Oh, wow.
So J.D. had a very special place in Elvis's heart. And when there was an opening, Elvis had a group called the Imperials. They were, you know, backing him up. They had a conflict. They could not make the date. So Elvis called J.D. and wanted to know if the J.D. and the Stamps could make the date. So that's really how we got the date, you know, the gig to sing with Elvis.
Hmm. Well, as songwriters, one of the stories that just blew me away in here was talking about Elvis in the studio when you guys were recording with him, and how y'all went into the studio not even knowing what songs you were going to be singing, and then they just come and play demos right there for Elvis. If you tell us what that had to be like, because then he'd like it, and then boom. Yeah.
Well, Elvis recorded like no one else. There's no question about it. He did not know what song he was going to record when he went into the recording studio.
Right.
Unlike what we do in this day and age, we listen to songs over a long period of time.
Sure.
So we lock in on, you know, the 10 songs that we want to record. So we know what we're going to record going in.
Mm-hmm.
We have had time to work on these songs. We've had time to rehearse these songs, but not with Elvis. Elvis had no idea. He had an A&R guy named Lamar Fyfe who found his songs for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember being at the RCA Studios in Los Angeles,
okay,
for the recording session, and we sat there, and all of a sudden Lamar started playing demos, and it seemed to me like he played demos for hours, and Elvis did not really like anything that Lamar was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Lamar played a song called Burning Love, a hunk of burning love.
Uh-huh.
Now, Elvis really did like that song.
Okay.
And so we went down, so we immediately made up the arrangement. Ronnie Tutt, who was the drummer back then, you know, I believe Ronnie lives in Nashville now.
Okay.
He up with the arrangement. He came over, made sure the Stamps, we had our vocal parts right. And right there, in just a matter of a few minutes, we recorded the song, and we cut a hit. You know, I say we. Elvis did.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
That great guitar part and everything, that was all
of that. It just came together in just a very short period of time. And Elvis recorded like he performed on stage. He did not go into like a vocal, you know, like we do. In
with
this
the headphones.
Headphones. He had a handheld mic, and he walked around in the studio like he walked around on stage.
Oh, my gosh. Were the sound guys just going crazy?
Yeah. The engineer must have been going nuts.
He was an engineer's nightmare.
He's standing over next to the horn section. It's like, great.
For a while, he'd come over and hang out with the Stamps. For a while, he loved what we were doing. He would smile and have a lot of fun. Then he'd go over to and go. He'd work the room, kind of like he was working the stage almost.
That's awesome.
But somehow it worked.
Well, and that's probably why that intensity is there in the recordings, because, like you say, he is working the room.
And another thing about Elvis, and I've done it myself, you know, he would never sing the same song over and over and over and over again. You had to get it like one take, or maybe two or three maximum.
Yeah.
You know, Elvis was not going to go back in and fix a part. You know, he was going to sing it, and you had to get it. The engineer had to get it.
Wow.
Which I think further is a further testament to how talented Elvis really was. No pro tool like we have in this day and age. No tuning the parts. No, you know, what you got with Elvis is what you got. You know, and when you listen to those records, you know, he was so ahead of his time. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, look, for our listeners, this is we've just touched on the stories here.
We're just on the first couple chapters at this
point.
Yeah,
and again, his book. This book is From Elvis to Elvira: My Life on Stage. Where can people buy this book?
Well, it's available wherever books are sold for the most part.
Okay.
The best place to get it is to go to oakridgeboys.com.
Okay.
Anything Oak Ridge Boys, that's the place to go. Go to oakridgeboys.com. There's a link there that will take you to the book, and you can buy it that way. Or if we're coming to your town, and we have a very busy schedule the rest of this year, you can buy it from us. You know,
okay.
We carry the book as well. You can download it off of iTunes. You know, you can get it off of Amazon. There's several places to get it on the internet.
Okay.
But I would recommend oakridgeboys.com.
There you go. Go to oakridgeboys.com because this book is such a great read. This segment is brought to you by our friends over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That is true. Now, Scott and I both drive Toyotas, and so we have a lot of experience going to that dealership, especially for service on our cars, just regular maintenance and stuff like that. And every time I go there, I just think, God, this is so unlike any other car dealership I've ever been to. It's actually a comfortable place and a calm place to go.
I was there once and they had a bunch of food out for the people waiting to get their cars. And I'm not talking, you know.
No, that was
I'm not talking
like catered. Yeah,
dried out Danishes. I'm talking food.
Yeah, they do that. They do that on Saturdays. It's amazing.
I've keyed my own car tires just to go get lunch. It's really good. No, go see George over there. He's the owner. Find him online, toyotaofcoolsprings.com. That's toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. Now, we're going to be back with more of Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys here in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show. So come on back. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys, and you know that song. That's Elvira. And that's a recording actually from the night that they were inducted
into the Grand Ole Opry.
Into the Grand Ole Opry. That's right.
Well, how about that?
There you go.
And what a special night that was. There's no question about it. I'll never forget, not as much the night we were inducted, but the night that we found out that we were going to become members of the
How'd they break it to you?
Oh, it was the biggest surprise that probably anyone has ever pulled on the Oak Ridge Boys. We were scheduled to be on the Opry.
Yeah.
And let me say this. There's a lot of great things about Nashville. The Opry is one of those things. It's very special.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. We were singing on the Opry, I believe scheduled to do two songs. And I think we were going to do Y'all Come Back Saloon. I hope my memory serves me correctly here. But we're going to do Y'all Come Back Saloon and then go into Elvira.
Okay.
We did Y'all Come Back Saloon, and we got our usual ovation there, our usual hand. But then the ovation would not quit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was like a commotion in the crowd that we couldn't understand what was going on. We turned around and looked, and here's little Jimmy Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
Walking out on stage, dressed like William Lee Golden.
With the long beard.
He had the long beard. He had the sunglasses on under his cowboy hat.
Oh, that is
trying
awesome.
Trying to look like William Lee Golden. And Joe or somebody in the group said, Jimmy, you look like you're trying to be the fifth Oak Ridge boy. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He says, I'm going to be the fifth Oak Ridge boy because you guys are about to become the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, and wow.
If it sounded like we were excited right there singing that version of Elvira, yeah, it's because we were very, very excited.
There's
no doubt about it. But,
wow.
But the surprise factor, you know, of Jimmy Dinkins coming out and actually informing us that way was pretty special. And then he had a big part in the induction night as well. He really did.
That's great.
Man, that's great.
You know, and to think about you getting to that point with the Oak Ridge Boys, again, the book is From Elvis to Elvira. We're here with Richard Sturban. And in the book, you talk about the Oak Ridge Boys bridging that change from gospel to wanting to delve into country. And that was not an easy transition financially or professionally. And really one of the turning points was you guys got so hard up for money that you guys tried to sell your publishing to Johnny Cash, and he said no, he wouldn't buy your publishing. So that was a big turning point for y'all.
Well, there's some truth to what you said right there. You know, we did have publishing companies, and we just to generate some revenue, you know, we wanted to, you know, sell our publishing companies to Johnny. We felt like possibly he could afford to buy them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny Cash was so instrumental in the future of the Oak Ridge Boys. What he did, he put us on some of his shows. You know, we opened some of his shows in places like Las Vegas and different places around the country. And he actually paid us more money than we were worth at the time. And one thing about Johnny Cash, every time we worked with him, we had a certain amount that was on the contract, mm-hmm, that we were, you know, scheduled to be paid. He always paid us more than what the contract said. He
really?
Always gave us, I guess the best way to put it is a tip, if you will, you know, but always he gave us extra. He knew we were struggling and he tried to help us out.
Wow.
But more than his financial help that he gave us, and it was certainly needed at the time, were his words of encouragement. We were working in Las Vegas with him, and after the dates in Las Vegas, we had no other dates in our date book. We had no idea what we were going to do. We didn't know if we were going to be able to continue as the Oak Ridge Boys, or if we were going to have to disband, or what we were going to do. Johnny Cash called us one afternoon and said, fellas, I want you to come up to my room. I'm going to talk to you guys. We went up to his room, which is a suite there in the Las Vegas Hilton. It used, mm-hmm, to be called the, when I first played there with Elvis, it was called the International Hotel. But the name had been changed to the Las Vegas Hilton.
Okay.
At same building, though, same hotel. And we went up to Johnny Cash's room, and he said, fellas, I can tell your heads are hanging, and you guys are struggling, and you're thinking about maybe giving up. He said, but I can also tell that there's something very special about the four of you guys. He said, you guys know it between the four of you. He says, I know it. He says, you've got to find a way to stay together. You got to find a way to not give up, because if you give up, you will never realize your dream. And he was so right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking out of that meeting that day with Johnny Cash, the four of us, instead of our heads hanging, we were holding our heads up high, and we went, wow, if Johnny Cash thinks we can make it, because he said, believe me, if you'll stay together, I can promise you good things are about to happen to you guys.
Wow.
Just stay together. And so we walked out of there and we said, wow, if Johnny Cash thinks we can make it, we can make it. And sure enough, it was not much later that things started to fall into place. You know, we met Jim Halsey,
mm-hmm,
who became our manager. He's still our manager to this very, very, very day. You know, and he put us with the right people. Jim also had the largest talent agency in country music back then.
Right.
So he was able to book us on some dates to keep us going. Mm-hmm. And He signed us to a record contract with ABC Dot Records. Mm-hmm. He put us together with Ron Chancey, who ended up producing all the Oak Ridge Boys' greatest hits, you know. And he took the bull by the horn, so to speak, and he started guiding our career, directing our career. And, you know, just like Johnny Cash said, you know, good things started to happen to us. And I do remember just a few years later when we won our first CMA award as Vocal Group of the Year, mm-hmm. Johnny Cash was hosting the show.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And I remember when they announced our names, the Oak Ridge Boys, for Vocal Group of the Year, you know, how the award shows are. There's a podium on the left-hand side where the people who are presenting the awards, where they stand.
Right.
And then the host of the show is on the right-hand side looking up there.
Right.
It would be the reverse of that being up there on the stage.
Right.
But instead of running over to accept, they called our name, instead of running over to accept our award, we ran over to Johnny and we all hugged him. And he said, "See, fella, I told you so.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you mentioned Vegas just a second ago, and one of the things you talk about in the book is that playing a place like Vegas or Reno, Tahoe, or even the Oak Ridge Boys Theater, which you have in Branson, that it's sometimes maddening for you to stay in one place for so long. What did you mean by that, and what do you do to kind of mix things up when you are doing that?
Well, you know, first of all, when we were there with Johnny Cash, it was not that difficult because
sure.
We just had, I think we had 10 minutes,
right,
you know, or 12 minutes maybe. So you can only like squeeze in like three songs in that period of time, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it was not that difficult to keep our show exciting.
Right. But in general, down the line, when you were having to spend a couple weeks or a couple months in one place and you're doing two shows a day and...
William's painting. What are you doing to keep yourself busy?
How did you keep it fresh?
But you know, everybody kind of does their own thing and
right.
in their own way. But then we come together on stage.
Okay.
And we kind of pride ourselves in the fact that we... never do. Maybe never is not the correct word, but very rarely do we do the same show twice.
Okay.
We always change it around. You know, we have 23 number one country records at this point in our lives. We have about 50 chart records. You know, and then you know we have recorded a lot of new music in recent years.
There's no way to do it all.
And you know we like to always include gospel on the show. We're patriotic guys. We love to honor our country and our veterans and our troops. And Joe Bonzel, we all have our areas of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
His job, one of his jobs, along with being on Twitter, you know, he's our Twitter guy, you know. One of his jobs is to make up the set list every night.
All right.
And he always makes it up in such a way that it keeps it interesting for the four of us.
Oh, that's great.
You know, really. And, you know, earlier in the day, he will email it to all of us. We all are able to read it early in the day. So we know ahead of time what we're going to be doing that night.
Right.
And so we also have the option, if there's something that we would like to change, you know, we have the option to email him back and say, no, maybe we ought to do this instead of that. But very, very rarely do we ever have to change anything because Joe is so good at it.
Yeah.
You know, he has a feel for it. It's hard to explain, regardless whether we're playing a casino or whether we're playing a fair, state fair or county fair or on a rare occasion, maybe a gospel venue. You know, he has a feel for what the people want on that particular night.
Mm.
So he does such a great job of making up the set list. And so very rarely do any of us ever try to change it because it worked out so well. But the fact that we change it around does help keep it interesting for the four of us.
Well, that's great. You mentioned in the book that I think it was Elvis that had a big jar out in the lobby that people put requests into for that night's show.
Well, and you know, in this day, and I mentioned Joe's on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, Dwayne's on Facebook. I do the old-fashioned thing. I do a lot of interviews with the group, but I spend a lot of time talking on the phone. I talk to radio stations and newspapers, and there's still a need for that in our business.
Sure.
But what was I going to say? I've lost my train of thought.
Oh, we were talking about requests.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. in this day of social media, you know, Joe pays attention, you know, to what people are requesting on, you know, online.
Yeah.
And we get Twitters, you know, every day. And a lot of times, a big bulk of our show are songs that have been requested by
That's
our
awesome.
Fans.
I'll be darned.
A great example is just this past Sunday night, 1 week ago tonight, we played the Kentucky State Fair for the 40th time in our career.
Wow.
We absolutely hold the record, and I feel pretty confident that it's a record that's going to stand for a long time. But over half of that show, you know, was made up of requests from people that requested songs that they wanted to
That's
hear.
Great.
So we try to honor those requests, and Joe tries to do that.
Have you ever had a request that was just some an obscure track on some album from a long time ago, and you guys had to go learn it? Or because, well, I mean, you've recorded so much, it's impossible to know them all by heart.
We try to honor the request within reason.
Yeah. It's too obscure.
Yeah.
But it's safe to say that there probably hasn't been one show in the last several decades that Elvira hasn't been sung. Is that a true statement?
That is a very, very yeah. true statement.
Yeah, I think we're going to leave that off the list tonight. What?
Yeah, yeah. The riot. Yeah. The riot,
you know,
in the casino.
I remember, you know, and we've done, you know, we have a gospel music background.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gaither's a good friend.
Oh, yeah. Okay? Yeah.
We've done several Gaither videos. And I remember the first time we went to do a Gaither video, we figured, you know, this has got to be all gospel. You know, we're not going to be doing any country music here. We go out there to do our first song, to rehearse our first song or whatever, and the Isaacs happened to be out on stage. They immediately started playing Elvira.
All right, we got to take a break.
Yeah.
The book is From Elvis to Elvira. We're here with Richard Sturban. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We're going to be right back. Stick around.
There is power, wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb. Would you be free from the burden of sin? There's power in the blood, power in the blood. Would you or evil a victory win? There's wonderful power in the blood.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys, and that's off of their brand new gospel project, Rock of Ages. That's a song called There's Power in the Blood.
Yes, great song.
Great song,
great
yeah.
song. Jumping around in my car listening to that.
You know, we had quite a time doing those old songs. Most of those songs on that particular CD were songs that we all grew up at you know, as mm-hmm. kids, you know. We grew up on those songs, so they were all very familiar to all of us.
Yeah.
And anyone, any of our fans who would consider buying that, you know, if you're a person who's ever been to church, you've ever been to Sunday school, you're going to recognize those titles.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You really are. They're very familiar.
Well, as we talked about earlier in the hour, the Oak Ridge Boys started out as a gospel group before transitioning to country. How hard was that transition? How did the audience that you had at the time take that, or promoters? How did that go for you?
Well, you know, we kind of touched on it some already earlier. You know, it was during that period of time that Johnny Cash came into the picture.
Right.
We were struggling along, you know. We were kind of in a gray area.
Okay.
You know, we've kind of decided we were going to make a move. You know, we wanted to increase. We did not want to be so marginalized, you know. And we wanted to increase our outreach,
right?
So, and we felt in order to do that, we had to, you know, get into country.
But did you have any part of your audience that didn't like that?
Oh, of course,
yeah,
there were some. But I think for the most part, a lot of our hardcore fans stayed with us, because I do remember, and I remember, you know, Dwayne actually saying this on several occasions, that when we had a first single out there, you know, Y'all Come Back Saloon,
yeah,
it was. There was some resistance, you know, at some country radio stations, and it was our hardcore gospel fans that actually called the radio station requesting the Oak Ridge Boys, you know, singing, you know, Y'all Come Back Saloon. So they actually helped us. So our true hardcore fans never really left us. They never did.
That's great.
As songwriters, since you mentioned Y'all Come Back Saloon, I was fascinated by the fact that you did ask for some lyric changes in that song, just to make sure that you were staying true to yourselves as
people.
Yeah,
there was a line in there that referred to a tithe, you know, which almost sounded, I don't know if sacrilegious is the right word to use, but it's
on the line.
It bothered us. Mm-hmm. And so we had it changed, you know, and then it worked out just fine. You know,
that's great.
A better example.
Jimmy Buffett?
No. Years ago, we went to the Soviet Union.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
We went to the Soviet Union with Roy Clark and Buck Trent. He was a part of the cultural exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to know ahead of time what songs we were singing.
And the lyrics.
We had to send them copies of the lyrics. They had to screen everything that we were doing over there. We had just won a Grammy, and in fact, Charlie Daniels played on it for "Where the Soul Never Dies,"
mm-hmm.
"Where the Soul of Man Never Dies." To that fair land, I'm on my way, where the soul never dies. And there's a line, and it starts out to Canaan land. I'm on my way. Is how the song
right.
starts out. Out of all the lyrics that could have bothered them, the word Canaan land.
Because nobody knew what it was.
They did not. There was not a word in their vocabulary that had anything to do with Canaan land, which is just another word for heaven, really.
Right.
And they said if we would change that, we could do the song. But their suggestion is really the humorous part of the whole story. They suggested that we change Canaan land to Disneyland.
Makes perfect sense. I mean, yeah.
So, and we said, I don't think that's going to work. So we went back to them and said, how about if we do "To That Fair Land, I'm On My Way, Where the Soul of Man Never Dies." They were happy with that. We were happy with that. And we were able to do the song.
And Mickey Mouse was very depressed. We need to take a break. We're going to be back with one more segment here with Richard Sturban. The book is From Elvis to Elvira. The CD is Oak Ridge Boys Rock of Ages. Stick around. We have lots more to talk about. We're on the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show.
We
are here with Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys, and they have a brand new project out. That's part of it you're hearing right there. It's called Rock of Ages, a brand new gospel project that they put out, and that's just a little talk with Jesus. That's what it looks like right there. Holding it up for the camera.
Beautiful.
For those of you that can see that later on.
Hey, we had a listener click in with a question.
That's right.
Did you see that?
I did.
Oh, he was asking how the Oaks got Elvira, how that song got to y'all.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. As we mentioned earlier in the interview, Ron Chancey produced all the Oak Ridge Boys hits. Mm-hmm. And basically, Ron brought that song to us. A song plugger that worked for Tree Publishing, a guy named Ronnie Gant, he passed away a few years ago. He was on vacation in Texas. He went into a bar, or maybe a karaoke bar somewhere, and the band was playing Elvira. And it was kind of like Dallas Frazier's version, you know, the only version that anyone had really ever heard of.
Because it had been recorded before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, exactly. Actually, it had been, before we recorded the song, it had been recorded like 10 different times.
Wow. Really?
Including Kenny Rogers, you know, mm-hmm. When he was with the First Edition. Rodney Crowell, you know, he recorded
it. I didn't know Rodney did.
I didn't know.
Recorded several times. But anyway, Ron again heard this song on vacation in the bar. And it struck him as a song that would be good for the Oak Ridge Boys.
Mm-hmm.
When he got back from his vacation, he worked for Tree Publishing. He went to his office. They published the song. Mm-hmm. He dug out Dallas Frazier's version, made a copy of it, sent it to Ron Chancey. We had a meeting scheduled with Ron shortly after because we were about to go into the studio to work on our new project. And Ron said, "Fellas, I'm going to play you guys something." He played, and it was Dallas Frazier's version. He said, "What do you guys think of this?" And we all looked at each other and said, "Wow, I think this is a song we've been looking for." You know, and sure enough, you know, we felt like we had something special. I remember the day we recorded the song. You know, it was at Woodland Sound Studios. And we were in there. All the musicians were having such a big time. It went down pretty easy that day. Everybody was smiling. I remember these guys know Jimmy Capps. He's
been on the show.
Yeah. He played on the session. I remember he had a big old smile on his face. And after the session was done, we felt like, you know, I think this is it. This is the song we've been looking for. But I don't think we ever realized how special the song was
until
the very first time we performed it in person. We were in Spokane, Washington at the Opera House.
And I hate to do this to you, but we are up on the hard break. That just, everybody needs to buy this book from Elvis to Elvira. Go to oakridgeboys.com. I was going to ask you about Spokane. We just ran out of time. You got to come back. Yeah. We got a whole half a book to get to.
I wouldn't knock Spokane. It's pretty nice.
You know what else is great is we got a whole other hour of the show coming up. We've got the great, great Daly and Vincent here with us. So you're going to want to come back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.